And thanks again, Sir Robin. It's Red. Helped us open the meeting. Take this opportunity to welcome those that have joined us since we first started. A warm welcome to any visitors with us tonight, and a huge and massive welcome to any newcomers that might be in the room. We hope you're going to hear something that encourages you to keep coming back. Like I said, we are a speaker meeting. We invite our speakers to share their experience, strength and hope with us for 40 or 45 minutes, whatever they're comfortable with. And I'm going to hand you over to Lisa, who's going to introduce our speaker this evening. So Lisa, over to you.
Thank you, Steve. Hi, everyone. I'm an addict and my name is Lisa.
Lisa.
Hello. Yes, I have the great honour of introducing our lovely speaker this evening. She's somebody that I met, I don't know actually how long ago, I met through a podcast that does that speaks about, you know, recovery literature, Narcotics Anonymous literature, and I love listening to her on it, and she's just really honest and real. And she's a really kind person as well. She's always made me feel really at home around her. And I really appreciate that about her. So I'm now going to hand you over to the lovely Eva P. Speak for 40 to 45 minutes, whatever you're comfortable with, Eva. And yeah, take it away.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I just love you so, so much. I'm going to go ahead and start my timer. So my name's Eva and I'm an addict. My clean date is June 10th, 2000, and I'm from Salem, Oregon, and I attend meetings at the Mid-Willamette Valley area. My home group is the Do It Hard meeting of Narcotics Anonymous, and I love that meeting. So I'm going to just start out with when I started using when I was a kid. I was 9 years old when I started drinking with my sister, who was 5 years older. She was 14. And I would tell her that I would tell Dad that she was doing those things if she didn't share. So that's kind of where my manipulation started. And by the time I was 11, I was doing, this is going to age me, but I was doing cross tops, which was a diet pill that they had here in the United States that was just straight amphetamines. So by 11, I was doing cross tops. By 13, I was smoking weed and doing cross tops. And by the time I was 16, I was using methamphetamines. And that's kind of a quick rundown to just let you guys know that where I started in addiction. So my dad's an alcoholic, and I come from a family that's a little dysfunctional, but they all stay together regardless. And so I have this idea of staying in relationships no matter what. And when I was 17 years old, I met the man that I ended up having children with. By the time I was 19, I got pregnant and had my first child. I managed to quit using a couple of months into that pregnancy, and had a beautiful daughter. And then I had a son that I used for the first 6 months of his when I was pregnant with him. So you can see that I'm an addict through and through on my third, and I had my kids 1 year apart. So I had them in 90, 91, I had a miscarriage in 92, and then I had my third child in 93. In 1993, when I got pregnant with my youngest daughter, I used every single day of that pregnancy. And she was born meth affected. At that time in 1993, if you had a safe person in your home that wasn't using, you could bring your child home and not have any involvement with DHS or CPS, whatever, Child Protective Services is what that is here. And so they didn't take my child into foster care. They let my mom take my children and they let me live there with them. So I didn't have any consequences for that, other than guilt and shame. But I didn't even feel that because I was using so heavily. 2 years later, I divorced my husband, who beat me on a daily basis. So when I left, the reason why I left is that he broke my nose, cracked my jaw, black both my eyes, and tried to drop me from a second story building from my feet. So that night I took my kids and I ran. We stayed underground or away from him in a safe place. for 9 months before he quit hunting for me. When he did come and started to be normal, he went to court and fought for visitation of my children. So I had to let him visit my kids. And when he did, he stole them and he took them and up in the mountains near the coast of Oregon, in Oregon. And I had to find my kids. It took days. And all this time I was using, so I felt like I couldn't go to court and fight because they would see that I was loaded. So anyways, we ended up getting the kids back. That was in 1995. My clean date obviously is 2000. So all these consequences just weren't enough, right? Like all these consequences weren't enough. So I kept using. I went from snorting to smoking drugs, and in 3 years, that methamphetamine, smoking that meth, it took everything from me. And the last part of my using was like this. My mom got cancer on was diagnosed with cancer, lung cancer, stage four, on Christmas Day in 1999. It was my job to take care of my mother. All I had to do was take her to chemo and radiation and make sure that she was okay. She wasn't able to drive herself because of how sick she was from the treatments. I stayed loaded so bad that one day after staying up for like, I don't know, 7 days, I couldn't wake up to take my mom, and she needed to go to chemo and radiation. So she drove herself. That guilt and shame from not being able to wake up and take care of my mother drove me out of my mom and dad's house where I lived to take care of my mom. And I left my kids with her sick for 2 weeks and stayed loaded every single day. Every single day, I was awake for 2 weeks doing methamphetamines, not eating, sick, sick, sick. After that 14-day run, I went to my best friend's house and I gave her the last of what I had. And I said, I'll give you all I have if I can just sleep in your bed. So about midnight, I went to sleep. And you know, if you know anything about being up for 14 days, you know you sleep for like 3 or 4. But in 6 hours, I woke up and I had this, I call it an awakening of the spirit, because I had to get home, I had to get clean. And I don't know where these thoughts came from because I never thought about getting clean ever. So I tried to go home, and my dad told me for the first time in all of my using, all of the years of my using, the 12 years of meth use, I couldn't come home. I couldn't see my children until I got clean. So I made a deal with him, of course, that if he got me into treatment, I would quit using. But I knew how hard it was to get into treatment. So I thought, this is going to be a cakewalk. He's just going to try and try. I'm not going to be able to get in, and life's going to be fine. So he let me come back, but he wouldn't let me leave. He put me in this one room and he said, this is where you're going to stay. And I even tried to sneak out the window and he caught me because I wanted more dope. But eventually, somehow, by the grace of my higher power, he found a treatment center that was willing to take me in and do an assessment. So I go and I do the assessment, and they said, oh, girl, you need some inpatient treatment. And I was like, shit, okay. And they said, but you have to be able to pee clean. Oh, and I was like, I don't know how to do that. So my ex-boyfriend's mom took me in another town called McMinnville, and that's where I kicked dope. Not a detox center, but on a bed in a couch. It was actually a couch. I wanted to say a bed, but it was a couch. With somebody sitting beside me. They hid all the phones. They had those really cool phones back then that were home landlines. And we didn't have cell phones yet. I think we did, but they were like those great big ones and they weren't affordable. You know what I mean? So she hid all the landlines from me. And everywhere I went, she made me pee with the door open so I couldn't use. She went outside when I went to smoke a cigarette, and I was able to pee clean. And Again, these treatment centers said that we don't have an opening yet, but you can do outpatient. But when I was kicking in those 3 days, somebody left the treatment center and I got in. That treatment center saved my life. It was a 30-day treatment and they let me stay. I used to say I was so sick I had to stay, but the truth is they let me stay for 143 days so that I could get well. And that saved my life. So, you know, my mom is still sick and I'm in treatment and she's driving up there to see me because no matter what I did, she loved me, right? So, I didn't plan on staying clean, you know, I mean, I don't know that any addict does, right? We think this is just going to get me clean and get my life back together and then I'll be able to go back and use. However, I have never used since I left treatment. I have never relapsed, so that's not part of my story. But some hardships definitely are. So 2.5 years, no, 2 years and 2 months and 7 days after I got out of treatment or got clean, my mom passed away, and I sat beside her. I was able to take care of her every day after I got out of treatment. And she passed away on August 17th, 2002. And I was alone with her in the room. I got to be the one to hold her hand when she moved over into the next phase where her higher power took her. And what happened was I called somebody in recovery because I didn't know what to do. I'd never been through that. Losing my mother was a big deal. She was so good to me and loved me no matter what. So a friend of mine in recovery, I called her because I didn't know what to do. 2 years clean. And she came and she took me to this meeting place where it's a little house, you know, a club is what we call them. I don't know if you guys have them there, but the SOS club is where I went. And she took me to this meeting and I was like, you know, I'm going to cry the whole time, you know? And she's like, oh, and by the way, you're going to chair. I was like, shit, I don't know if I could do that. And she's like, just pick a reading. So I picked recovery and relapse because I was so scared that that's what I was going to do that day. I was not sure that I could stay clean through the loss of my mother at 2 years clean. But you know what? Narcotics Anonymous wrapped their arms around me and nobody let me be alone for like 3 weeks. Like, my friend Coffee was there every day. Like, come on, girl, we're going to a meeting. Girl, you need to get in the shower. You need to take care of yourself because I didn't know what to do. Like, I was so broken. So I walked through the death of my mother 2 years clean, you know. And at this time, I was just starting to really get into the steps. My sponsor, and like my first sponsors, they all relapsed. And I thought, it's me. I'm causing them so much karma. They couldn't handle my shit. So, you know, because I take things personal. I internalize whatever goes wrong, like it's my fault, you know. And because I hadn't worked the steps in a complete 12. So I finally found a sponsor. What had happened is I was sleeping with everybody in the room. I didn't care if they were married or not. Every dude I could find, I would sleep with. And pretty soon I wasn't really welcome at the clubs anymore. I was 3 years clean and I was just I moved from doing dope to sleeping with anybody I could to beat those feelings, right? So I thought I need to do a geographical. I need to get out of here because every time I go into a meeting, every dude I look at, I've slept with. And it was really uncomfortable, you know, but that's my truth. I didn't know how to do it different. I hadn't worked the steps. I didn't know what to do. So I moved. My sister lived in this little town in Idaho, and I moved to Rastrum, Idaho with a population. I moved from Salem, which is a population of a couple hundred thousand people, to a town of 1,000 where they had no meetings. I had to drive 45 minutes to a meeting. So I moved there and I meet this gal. Her name's Angel. And she looked at me and she said, you are a hot mess. You need to come with me, little girl. And I was like, she was scary. She was like this big big burly chick that rode motorcycles and didn't take any shit from anybody. And I was like, shit. When I moved to Idaho, I had the second most clean time with 3 years clean. She had seven. So I think she sponsored everybody. Anyway, so Angel got me through the first set of 12. And what had happened is that I quit sleeping around. I quit using food as much. If you saw me, you know that's still a struggle. But my life changed. In fact, I didn't even have a boyfriend, which was unheard of for me. Like, I always needed to have that dude, right? I always had to have somebody. And I lived alone for the first time in my life, you know, at 31 years old. My oldest daughter, Corinna, chose not to come up there with me and lived with my sister. And what brought me back to Salem was my sister's house caught on fire. And my daughter barely made it out. So I thought I needed to be home and take care of my own kids. And because of the 12 steps in Narcotics Anonymous, you know, I learned that they're my responsibility. You know, I needed to live life on life's terms and not just let my kids decide what they want to do, but be the mother I always needed to be. So I moved back to Salem, Oregon, 2004. And here's a funny part. I'd been away from sleeping with men for like 9 months, which was a miracle for me. I don't know how people do a year, but kudos to them. And my sister introduces me to this normie. His name's Brad. I was supposed to go meet him at a truck stop, so I was scared to death. I thought, I'm going to be murdered. And so I grabbed my son and my daughter. My youngest daughter and my son come with me, and I think he won't kill me in front of my kids. Anyways, I ended up marrying him a year later. And he's a normie, he's so sweet. But he comes to Narcotics Anonymous with me, he's a part of my fellowship. I think that's so important in a spouse, at least it was for me. Everybody's different, but I needed him to be okay with the lifestyle that I lived. You know, but right after that, I met my sponsor now, and her name's Donna S. She's from Eugene, but she lived in Salem at the time, and I've not changed sponsors since 2006. So it's been a long time and several sets of steps. And you know, I wish that I could say that the rest of the story is super easy and fun, but the truth is this: people in my life, for some reason, I take care of. And I had a best friend, Barbara. She was always there for me before I left for Idaho. And she was the only one that came to me and loved up on me, even though I was sleeping with everybody. She was like, we'll get through this, girl. Anyways, she was my best friend. And in 2011, she got the same cancer as my mother. I was driving truck with my husband at the time over the road all across the United States, and he said, "You need to get out of the truck and you need to take care of Barbara." You know, part of my story is taking care of people and being with them until they pass. And so for 18 months, we helped cross off everything on her bucket list that she could. And on 420, 2012, I got to be with Barbara and hold her hand as she transitioned into her next whatever higher power took her home. And again, I didn't know what to do. Well, I did this time actually, because last time I had coffee. And guess what? I called coffee again. And we went to the same club. And we did the same meeting almost. And I read the same thing because it's hard for me to walk through that. But I know that it can be done now, right? Because my experience, strength, and hope tells me that. So moving forward, in 2013, I was working at a convenience store, and I'm feeling like my life is back to normal. I'm feeling good. And on December 5th, 2013, a man comes in at 5 in the morning with a gun and robs me at gunpoint. God changed my life in 10 minutes. I went from feeling safe and secure and a strong, independent woman to somebody who was scared to death and couldn't leave her home. I was so scared, I just couldn't do it. So I had to quit that job. But before I did, I met this man. Because my story has men in it, and when I don't know what to do and I want to use really fucking bad, what do I do? I go back to my character defects, which is sleeping with a man. Even though I'm married, this dude comes in and he's like, I'm still working at the store. I didn't quit right away because I'm an idiot. And I thought, I'm going to show people how strong I am and I'm going to keep this job. But what happened is I met this dude, so I didn't want to quit right away. And he started texting me. And then all of a sudden, I'm having an affair. And it didn't start when I was sleeping with the man. It started when I started texting the man. Right? But that's me living in my character defects, like looking for somebody else to fix me. So I had this affair, and my husband, I tell my husband, like, hey, this is what I'm doing. My sponsor, I was so fucked up around this. Because I'm living in character defects, so everything in my life is unmanageable, right? Everything in my life. So I'm living just like I was when I was loaded. Lies, deceit, cheating. So my sponsor, she says, I'm coming up there. She's an hour away. So she comes up and she goes, come on, we're going for a walk. So we go for a walk and she said, listen, you're gonna quit having an affair. You're gonna quit lying and cheating. You're gonna quit gambling, because I know you are. I was. I don't know how she knew, but she knows me. I mean, we're talking 7 years of her sponsoring me, right? So she said, if you don't quit, you're gonna have to find a new sponsor. Oh no. No. So all of a sudden this shit comes in becomes important to me because she's my lifeboat. She's my safe place. She knows everything about me and I can't lose her. I can't. So I tell this dude it's over. It was the hardest thing to kick. I thought smoking was hard. No. Kicking this dude, and it was just like kicking dope. Like, I was sick. I wanted to text him every day. So every time I wanted to text him, I had to text my sponsor. Right? But the cool thing is, I didn't get loaded. I didn't kill myself, which I wanted to. So fast forward now, I get through that hot mess. And, but I'm still having bad anxiety and things like that, PTSD from this robbery. So what happens is they find the guy because his best friend's girlfriend turned him in for the reward money. And now I have to face this guy face to face in Polk County Court. And all I can think of is this dude is 18 years old on heroin, and he just went to any lengths to get loaded. Any lengths. And it happened to be around me. So I asked the judge to have leniency on him because I've been there and I feel guilty about sending him to prison. Crazy, right? I had to work through that. So, anyways, we get him into prison and everybody's like, so now you can feel safe. But the truth is I never felt safe. I still struggle to this day. With anxiety, PTSD, nightmares, no sleep. But the only thing that saves me is Narcotics Anonymous's 12 steps. That reminds me that I can work through all of the craziness, the insanity, right? Step two. And then step three, I can have God remove all these fears if I'm willing to write it down and face it. And that's my truth. I have to face it. So in 2020, in August of 2020, I've had a run of no sleep, like, I don't know, 6 days where I've had like 3 hours of sleep from the PTSD. And the insanity is so out of control that I have to do something that I haven't done yet, and that was ask for help outside of Narcotics Anonymous. And they put me in an inpatient mental health treatment center for 7 days so that I don't harm myself because the insanity is so out of control. So I go to this treatment center, and then my sponsor says, okay, we're starting with step one because you need to look at the powerlessness of this and the out of control behavior. And you need to look at the insanity and know that you can be restored. So I start the 12 steps again. And lo and behold, in November on Thanksgiving in the United States, which is I think it was the 24th of November that year, I get COVID. And I get transported to the hospital in an ambulance because I can't breathe and I can't walk. The next day was my sponsor's 35 years clean, and I wanted to do that on Zoom. So I get on Zoom at the hospital and tell her that I love her. And I'm glad that I did because that night, actually, I think 3 hours later, I ended up on the ventilator for 12 days with COVID. And by the grace of God, I'm here, or my higher power, I'm here. And that changes your life. That changes your recovery. Like, I wanted to all of a sudden live again. And so when I woke up, the first thing after I called my husband was I called my sponsor, because all I could think of was she taught me the gratitude to want to live again. So right now I'm on step 10 of the relationship steps. And if you've never done them, oh my God, they are the hardest set of steps I've ever done. And I'm 22 years clean, and I've done probably 15 sets of steps. But again, I'm in gratitude. Today, this weekend, I'm at the coast. The ocean is, I can hear it. I've got seven of some of my best friends around me, my women, and my life is full today of gratitude and love. I do a podcast, the Anonymous Podcast. We did a basic step study, and I got to, I had the honor and the privilege of doing that. And now we're doing the Living Clean study. So, what I can say is I'm always in the literature, I'm always in the steps. And because of that, I've never had to use again. Never. And I've enjoyed the one thing that Narcotics Anonymous promises, and that's freedom from active addiction. And I don't just mean drugs. I mean men. I mean food, gambling, shopping. Reading books can be an addiction for me. I could shut the door and read a book for 8 hours and not do anything in my life I'm supposed to do. And if I don't think that that's addiction, then I'm so fooling myself. Because anything that I use to avoid my life is a part of my addiction. It's avoiding the feelings that I have to feel, life on life's terms. So I have to be really careful, right? I have to be vigilant. But I don't want to be so vigilant that and so serious that I don't enjoy the life that Narcotics Anonymous gave me. I want to be happy, joyful, and enjoy the freedom that Narcotics Anonymous gave me. You know, it's such an honor and a privilege to be on a meeting today of Narcotics Anonymous. This is a gift. Blue jeans, Zoom, all of this is a gift of my higher power, I believe, that allows me, even when I can't leave my house, I can enjoy a meeting of Narcotics Anonymous and get the fulfillment that I need to make it another day when days are hard and when days are good. I have to tell you, the hardest thing in my recovery that I didn't use over was that first, because we pay taxes in a way, right? And then at the end of the year, if you have a bunch of kids, what like I did when I first got clean, you get this big refund back. And I have to tell you, that was the hardest thing. I mean, I went through death, you know, being robbed, COVID almost killed me, all these things, you know, all the life things, an affair. And the hardest thing that I ever went through in Narcotics Anonymous was having $4,000 with a year clean. Because I didn't know what to do, right? Like, all I wanted to do was do what I used to do. Like, I had all this money all of a sudden and not even a year clean. So, and again, it was Narcotics Anonymous that saved me. I called somebody and I said, what do I do with all this money? And they're like, give it to your family to hold. And I did that, you know? So, but that was hard shit. I have to be honest. You know, it's not always the bad things. Sometimes it's the good things that will get me in my head and think, ooh, what can I do with this? You know what I mean? Like, make more money. So I guess my message in that is be careful of, you know, of all of the things in life that can trigger us. It can be good things, you know, going to a party and everybody's drinking. Those are fun times, but they're dangerous for me and I have to be very vigilant. So I just wanted to throw that in there just to remind you that my life hasn't always been bad. I think that this was all my things that I struggled to get through, but it's just all part of my story. That's my life. You know, today I'm filled with gratitude and love. I'm able to sponsor women in a loving, kind way. I'm able to be sponsored and not rebel when she tells me what to do. Or I mean suggest, if you knew my sponsor, that's not really how we do it. She tells me what to do and I'm like, yes, mom. Anyway, I've shared for about 30 minutes, so I feel like I'm at a good place to stop. I just want to thank you guys again. It was lovely to be on here. And Lisa, thank you so much for asking me. I'm sending all kinds of love and gratitude to you guys. Thank you so much for letting me share.